The first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, whether it's scientific truth or historical truth or personal truth. It is the guiding principle on which Starfleet is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up and tell the truth about what happened, you don't deserve to wear that uniform. I'm going to make this simple for you, Mr. Crusher. Either you come forward and tell Admiral Brand what really took place, or I will.
Captain.
Dismissed!
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between the Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, requesting that Cam come and speak to me in my ready room. I have something that I want to tell him.
Yes, young Padawan, what is it?
I'm the young Padawan. Yeah. I don't think you understand this this whole metaphor here.
This is the way it's going to work from my point of view.
Okay, I think you're just saying that because I have a rat's tail today. So, Cam, what is tonight's conundrum here?
We are going to talk about the captains as mentors. Which ones work, which ones don't. And, you know, which relationships are the most profound in the various series?
Yeah, I think we landed on this topic when we were doing Lower Decks, our examination of the kind of the battle of the junior officers. And we realized that there was a lot of great mentoring moments with the captains. And we're like, okay, so are we able to figure out who might be the best mentor among all the captains, the ones that we just don't want to disappoint, who are there to inspire the officers in a way that's, I don't know if a Commander Data would be capable of.
Right, for sure. And, you know, which relationships do the captains form that they kind of go above and beyond the professional capacities of being a captain?
Whoa.
Not like that. And actually really want to, like, help someone along in their career that maybe they can't afford to when you've got a massive crew of, you know, 1,000 or whatever, however many people on your ship. You can't focus on all of them. So, like, which relationships are the ones they really pick as their winner picks, essentially, you know, who are the ones they're like, you know what, this one's gonna go the distance, the rest of them, a lot of, you know, Kevin Riley's.
You know, why don't we kick it off with Janeway here? I think this is a very important one. Let's just get it out of the way. The Seven of Nine and Janeway relationship, which starts, you know, very early on with Scorpion Parts Two, where we get these hints that Janeway is there to kind of teach Seven of Nine humanity, and the relationship takes off there. There are some hills and valleys where Seven of Nine pretty much has free reign.
Yes.
But it's interesting how we always get Janeway kind of bringing her back in to kind of the orbit of humanity, which always works for me.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I always wondered with Janeway, she was very open with Seven of Nine and allowing her access to a lot of the ship.
Yes, this former Borg drone.
And just being like, okay, I'm going to build, like, or put you in charge of astrometrics. I'm like, wow. I don't know that any of the other captains would have had such confidence in this Borg that's recently shown up on the ship.
They also, like, didn't... Okay, so yeah, they bring Seven of Nine onto the ship.
Yeah.
She's not an enlisted officer or anything like that. They get her to build an astrometrics lab.
Yeah.
When they bring Kes onto the ship, they're like, you can have a garden. So they clearly were far more impressed with Seven of Nine than they were with Kes at this moment. Is that a little unfair?
I mean, like, Lon Suter couldn't even get a garden, really.
That's
true.
It
took a lot of push and pull to get him that.
Yeah, so. How disappointing.
Yeah, if you're giving the power rankings for the various members who want side projects, you know, Seven of Nine ranks first.
Yeah, so for me, I think this is probably the number one mentor-mentee relationship, but I also want to highlight the Tom and Janeway relationship, and I think it really is something that has layers to it, because recall that, you know, Janeway served under then Captain Paris, now Admiral Paris. And,
right.
And so I think she
That's a spinoff I want.
I can't wait for the Owen Paris spinoff.
Yeah.
But I think she feels a little bit of a responsibility to get this wayward guy on the right track. I think it happens pretty quickly, but you look at an episode like 30 Days.
Yeah.
And you see that Tom fails Janeway. And she makes that known to him as well. And I think there is conflict. She's not exact. Well, she literally demotes him.
Right.
But there is a sense that he's failed somebody who's kind of taken him under her wing. And I think that's, you know, like a kind of a powerful sort of realization on the part of Tom, and something that rattles him.
early, I think it's in Caretaker, it's early in Voyager's run, like Chakotay refers to Tom Paris as Janeway's personal reclamation project, which is really interesting. And I don't know that the show did all it could with that. We definitely got Tom Paris acting out, and 30 Days is a great episode, I think, and probably the most powerful for those two characters and their dynamic. But I would have, I think, maybe liked to have seen more of that. Like,
I agree, yeah.
With a character like Tom Paris, you don't get that in Star Trek very often, of someone who is a Starfleet member kind of gone wrong, and a captain really trying to pull them back, you know, from the dark side, if you will.
I might have some examples later on, yeah, but for sure. I totally know, I agree with what you're saying. And
you have that as a centerpiece, you know, on the show, where it's not a side character or a recurring guest character. It is one of your stars, is this character who's kind of being pulled back into the fold of Starfleet. I actually think that's interesting. I mean, you could say the same thing with Chakotay, I guess. They didn't really do much there either.
Well, maybe we can address... Okay, so before we address maybe some weird pairings that would not necessarily have worked out as mentor-mentees, I also want to highlight the Harry and Janeway relationship.
Yeah.
I think more than anything else, I don't think like there's that Janeway 7 dynamic was really mother-daughter so much. There were hints occasionally.
It was... But what would you call that one?
Aunt-niece?
Sure.
Does that make sense?
I feel like ants are like kind of cool. I don't know that Seven thought Janeway was cool.
Okay.
I mean, we thought Janeway was cool, but yeah, I don't know that Seven would be like, yeah, man, it's the hip aunt I get to hang out with.
But it wasn't a mother-daughter relationship, was it?
No.
Yeah, so I don't know.
It was more like a strict teacher to a certain degree in that, like, Janeway was very supportive of Seven's talents and really pushed to further her education, if you will, but she would come down hard on her as well.
So would you call it a mentor-mentee relationship then?
I would call it that.
Okay, well, I think we've settled it.
I think, though, you know, I want to get back to Harry Kim, but I think the 7-1 is a really interesting opposite in many ways of the Kes-Janeway relationship, where that one was much more unguarded. Like, Janeway really opened up to Kes, and I don't know if it was because Kes had more of like an explorer gene to her. She was someone who wanted to get out there and experience things, which Janeway... Yeah,
fury.
But, you know, she would go to Janeway with problems, and Janeway would just, you know, the door was always open, and they would really talk through their problems.
Like, Janeway, I've got this horrible boyfriend. What am I supposed to do?
But, like, she goes to her about the eulogium, you know, from that episode that's so wonderful. But you also have, you know, her going to Janeway about Tuvix, about her feelings being really confused about what to do with Neelix coming back as this now combo of Tuvok and Neelix.
Yeah.
You get a lot of, I think, really strong, like, emotional support from Janeway towards Kes. Do you feel like you get that with Seven?
No, because I think there's that Borg antagonistic dynamic that was always present within Seven of Nine. And they could have their good moments, but a lot of the times I think Janeway is uncertain about where her loyalties always would lay. Look at an episode like Drone, in which, you know, Seven of Nine, you know, kind of does her own thing. We also see that in the Omega Directive, too. And I think that caused a lot of consternation on the part of their ongoing relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Let's briefly talk about Harry.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one.
I find that one leaning a little bit more towards kind of the parent-child sort of dynamic.
Yep.
Not so much, but, you know, I think more so than some of the other ones that are here on Voyager. And it's an interesting one, which I wish there were more moments between those two of them.
I agree, because you get an episode like The Disease, which is an episode we talk about far more than I ever dreamed we would talk about when I watched that episode. But you really see Janeway as this very tough mother figure, really giving Harry what for when he kind of compromises their mission and their relationship with this other alien species by getting involved with a female member of the other crew, or of the other alien species that they're working with. And it's an uncomfortable episode in a lot of ways, because it is Janeway really taking him to task.
Yep.
And I would have liked to have seen two things. I would have liked to have seen a little more of this relationship throughout the show of how she deals with Harry, because Harry is definitely like the green member of the crew, and this is extreme circumstances. I would have liked to have seen her kind of maybe have to guide him a little more. It would have just made, I think, the character growth for Harry Kim more interesting. I know that maybe Garrett Wong's like, I don't want to be told what to do a lot on the show.
Sure.
I want to look more confident and what have you. But I think for the character, it's more interesting. But I also think there's the problem that Harry Kim's too old for that type of role. If Harry Kim's like 18 when the show starts, you kind of buy it more. But Garrett Wong, I don't know how old he was when the show started, but he doesn't look like a kid.
No, I think you're right. And I think there's more worth exploring between the Kim and Janeway dynamic. But I like the hints that we got from it. And I also think about an episode like Timeless, and I don't know if Harry would have been nearly as determined to follow through. Old Harry would have been nearly as determined to follow through with his mission had he not the mentorship that he received from Janeway.
No, I agree 100%.
Cam, what would have been a weird pairing for like a Janeway to take somebody under their wing and try to mentor them? I mean, obviously there's like kind of the friendship present between her and Tuvok, and it doesn't really work out because he's got about 100 years on her. Or no, he's got about, I think, about 50 years on her.
Right.
So, I mean, she has more experience in Starfleet because he took an extendo sabbatical, but I don't know if that would have been a great mentor-mentee relationship. We never really got hints of that. It was more of kind of a friendship.
Janeway's a tougher one for this category because of the fact, I feel like just within the context of the show Voyager, Janeway's very much presented as like the mother figure on the ship.
Yeah.
And she has that relationship with much of the crew, even if she's not acting as a mentor figure in the way she is for some of the ones we've talked about. So they often tried pairing her up with a lot of these characters, even someone like B'Elanna Torres. They give her moments with B'Elanna or the Doctor. But I'm trying to think of who would be weird. I mean, I think I would have just been fascinated to watch an episode where Janeway's trying to be a mentor to Lon Suter.
That would have been delightful, I'm sure.
Yeah. But you see in an episode like The Good Shepherd, which we talked about a handful of weeks ago as well, with like a trio of cadets, and how she is very good with a crew we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I like...
She has natural leadership abilities there.
I like how there's that one member of the crew, though, Mortimer, who she's just like gives up on. She's just like, I don't know.
I kind of don't blame her.
No, though. I don't either.
He wasn't our favorite character.
Yeah.
Cam, why don't we jump over to... Well, let's do Captain Kirk here.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one, though.
A fascinating one.
I think he's one of the most dynamic captains in all of Star Trek. I think that goes without saying. He's one of my favorites. I'd put him in my top three for sure.
Yeah.
But as a mentor, I mean, look, he had the Charlie X
stuff. Oh, I think that's honestly the one the most worth talking about, just to see how Kirk is a mentor.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about it, but acknowledge the fact that Charlie is not actually a member of the crew.
I don't know if that's that relevant, though, in this discussion, because if you're a mentor, they don't have to be Starfleet members.
But it's called captains as mentors.
Sure.
So if you take away the captain role, then
he's a captain, and he's a mentor.
Okay.
That's just his job.
Yeah, but no, let's talk about Charlie, though.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, Janeway, she talked on the show about her her mentor being Admiral Patterson in the episode Relativity, which, you know, was a teacher who was very strict and tough in Starfleet Academy and gave her that, you know, that voice that she needed and taught her a lot about how to be a mentor. It's interesting, when I did research, Kirk doesn't seem to have had a mentor. And I think that really comes across when you see his mentoring experiences in the TV show.
Yeah.
Well, the Charlie X is a fascinating one.
I'll just jump in here because maybe we can tackle both Prime and Kelvin versus
I had them separated in my notes.
Kirk.
Yeah.
Well, we can go do them in parallel as opposed to waiting until later on. But
yeah,
clearly in the Kelvin verse, you do have Pike
definitely
as Kirk's mentor. But let's talk about Kirk as a mentor.
Yeah. Charlie X is the example we get the most of in the TV show. I mean, I think you could say Miri. There's a little bit there. A little bit?
I don't know.
You get to sharpen pencils?
Whatever.
Yeah.
But Charlie
X is the really fascinating one because, yeah, they bring this kid on the ship. He's been with an alien culture his whole life, and his behavior is all over the map. And we see that Kirk, in behavior that becomes very uncharacteristic as you go through the series, really takes an interest in guiding this young man and making him, you know, a better human being. And how does he do that, Tyler?
He strips down half naked, oils himself up, and teaches him some physical combat skills.
Does this not feel like total 1960s tough dad behavior?
Oh, or 1990s tough Father Orton behavior, man. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what your household is like, but this is normal for me.
It was like Festivus at your house every day.
Yes. What is it called? The trial of it was a Festivus ceremony.
Yeah, I don't remember what they actually called the wrestling thing, but yeah, I find this like totally. It's the sort of thing that I think plays really goofy, but I'll bet you to viewers at the time it wouldn't have been as weird.
Yeah,
because I think there was just different relationships between like fathers and male teachers or whatever in the school or at home or what have you, and that their ways of guiding young people was very different.
Yeah,
and it's amusing to watch, but do you think Kirk is a good mentor in this episode?
I guess it depends on like what era you were growing up in.
Yeah.
I would say if you're watching this in the 1960s, you'd be like, yeah, you're teaching him how to be a real man.
Right.
You watch it nowadays, and it's just kind of weird. And
it's
you're like,
really
they
weird.
Have very different views of kind of gender roles nowadays
sure.
Than when they produce this episode. So I don't know. I hate constantly having to say when we're talking about the original series, it was of its era.
Sure.
But it kind of was. So
I've always felt like Kirk, I don't know that Kirk's necessarily a bad mentor in this episode, but I think he's missing the point with Charlie, or he's just not quite understanding. And this is something that I think goes back to that era where they didn't tend to mix up much their, say, teaching methods in schools. Like every kid was kind of taught the same way, and they didn't take into account various backgrounds or learning, you know, disabilities or anything like that.
Yeah.
You look at Charlie X, I don't think it takes you long from a modern perspective to look at Charlie X and be like, I don't know that wrestling in the gym is what this kid needs.
Right. Yeah.
And I think Kirk proves that, at least in this episode, in the context of a 1960s show, he's not a very good mentor for someone like Charlie X, who is, I think Picard, for example, might have been a better mentor for someone like Charlie X. I think Kirk is tackling from that, like, as you said, like, a man's got to be, you know, what a man's got to be and all that sort of stuff. And this is a kid who hasn't been around humanity his entire life.
Yeah.
I think he needs a gentler, you know, introduction into humanity than being tossed into a gym and being shown how to take a break fall or whatever.
I agree. If we're speaking about crew members, though, the only one that really pops out to me, and I actually had to go to the movies to think about it, but that's the Savick relationship.
I agree, yeah.
That, there's that turbo lift scene in The Wrath of Khan where you actually just see kind of the chemistry between Kirstie Alley and William Shatner, and you really see, you know, Kirk making an effort to say, okay, I see what this woman's role is going to be moving forward here on the ship. She means a lot to Spock.
Was it really, Tyler?
How could they have ever known at the exactly. time? You know, so, but you know what? Kirk was living in the moment. Like, you know, so, and I think that was such great untapped potential. Because I have to be honest, by the time you get to, you know, Search for Spock, and I don't think Robin Curtis really shared that same chemistry with one William Shatner.
No. Did she share many scenes with him at all?
Maybe a view screen moment?
Maybe a farewell moment at one point. Yeah.
So it wasn't quite there. But I think if you look at the potential, I think that's actually maybe when it comes to officers, that was really Kirk's highlight, though. And ever so brief.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my only disappointment, that it was so brief, though.
I think it's really interesting that you don't get what feels like a really authentic sort of mentor moment from Kirk until the movie where he's acknowledging his aging. So it is very much about this passing on what he's learned. But then the movies kind of backtrack, and they go into this him as Peter Pan figure, and he's no longer that older guy passing on wisdom to the young class anymore.
Do you think the issue then during the original series was that in Kirk's mind, how could I be a mentor when I am pretty much a 20-year-old at heart?
Well, is Kirk too, you know, quote-unquote cool to be a mentor figure?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Well, let's look at maybe the most obvious opportunity that would have been there in the original series. I think he could have taken Sulu under his wing.
Sure.
Sulu definitely wanted to be on that command track.
Or Chekhov.
And I was going to say, or it could have been Chekhov.
Yeah.
And the only problem is, and this is just part of, you know, what the series was as its core, but it was a trio.
Mm-hmm.
Sulu, Chekhov, and Uhura, they weren't really fleshed out characters.
Yeah.
You know, they're fun to have around, but they weren't characters in and of themselves. So we didn't really get to see many great moments of them just being, you know, multidimensional characters. Mm-hmm. And so I think the writers must have been like, no, let's just keep focusing on Kirk and his dynamic with Spock and McCoy.
Yeah.
And to maybe a lesser degree, Scotty as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So I missed opportunity. What kind of weird pairings do you think there could have been between Kirk and other crew members on the ship?
Well, before I get to that, I was going to say, though, don't you think it was a missed opportunity to not have Kirk play a little bit more of a mentor role with Decker in the motion picture?
Yeah, but you know what? Okay, no.
It's tough because I know you want to get the Kirk back in charge of his Enterprise.
And the thing is, Decker was incredibly resentful of Kirk
for
demoting him from captain to commander, taking over command once again. I don't think Decker would have been taking what Kirk would have been kind of, you know, providing in terms of like mentorship.
Sure.
So I think that would have been kind of a tough. Like, I agree. Like, it could have been interesting because it was supposed to be Decker's first command. Kirk's kind of a jerk in this one where he takes it away from him.
Yeah.
I totally understand why Decker was the way he was in that one.
Sure.
So,
and is Kirk a mentor towards Picard in Generations?
If you want to know how to ride a horsey, you
it
know.
It does say don't, you know, ever stop being a captain.
Or if
he
you
does give
know,
some advice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but, you know, I would like to think, and we'll find out, I guess, in the Picard spinoff, if Picard does take that advice.
Sure.
In my brain, he does.
Yeah.
We'll find out soon enough if that's a reality, though.
But who would Kirk have been the weirdest match for as a mentor?
What would it have just not made much sense, you know?
I mean,
I think there was that dynamic between him and Janis Rand where it would have been uncomfortable if he was kind of, you know. Hey.
I don't really know that it would have been comfortable to see Kirk as a mentor to a female crew member, just in terms of the way they would have written that in 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have just, it may have been in the era. People would have taken it at face value, but I think now it would play really weird.
Yeah, and I think it's such a tough position for us where we're automatically negating half of humanity.
Sure.
But it is still, we know for a fact that the 1960s writers would have made it just kind of abhorrent to watch, or just like it would not have aged well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Whereas I think a lot of the shows aged well, and I think the character relationships on the show have aged well, and that would have been something that I think could have dragged it down.
I think Kirk trying to tell a woman how to be a better officer, it would have just been really kind of misogynistic.
Maybe it's
in a way that would not pass muster today.
Maybe it's better they waited until Wrath of Khan, because it didn't feel weird with him Savick. So maybe that was the time to do it.
Yeah.
But who would be the weird one? Scotty would have been kind of strange.
Yeah. Scotty almost seemed kind of like a contemporary, or maybe even had a few years on Kirk, too.
Is part of the problem with Kirk as a mentor in that so many of the people around him were around his age group or older? Because you've got Bones, who's, I think, a little few years older, Spock, Scotty. There's not a lot of young people around.
Yeah.
And Kirk never seemed like someone who was that interested in, say, the red shirts of his team.
That's why he let him die every week. Yeah.
I don't know that there's an interesting choice for the weirdest. I mean, I would say just in terms of historical looking back, I think we kind of hit the nail on the head with the female crew members would have been weird.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's anyone on the ship that jumps out to me as like, that would have been so weird.
Well, why don't we jump over to another weird captain, one Captain Benjamin Sisko.
Yeah.
And I think I go back to the format of the series as well. But you think,
weird or terrifying?
Well, think about let's look at the Starfleet officers, though. There's really, beyond Sisko, there were only three. There were the non-com Miles O'Brien, who was kind of had a few years of experience behind him, you know?
Yeah.
You also had Dr. Julian Bashir, who was very green, but he was also like a medical doctor. Did he really need to know tactical training maneuvers or leadership skills so much?
Right.
No, and we actually saw, Bashir kind of grow into it on his own. And then you have the old man, Jadzia Dax, and then later Ezri.
Who was kind of Sisko's mentor.
Well, exactly. But then here's what I did find. Ezri was a total mess when we first met her.
Yeah.
And I think in the first maybe quarter of that first season that she appeared on season 7, there was a bit of that mentor-mentee relationship.
Definitely.
That was not there during the Jadzia Dax experience, which I think was actually a kind of good thing.
Don't you feel like when you look back on that season, it was really, I don't know that I would say that didn't work, the Sisko Ezri thing, but it felt like the writers weren't that interested in it. And it's pretty soon she's being paired off with Worf a lot.
Well, it definitely fell by the wayside. But I, the reason it sticks out to me is, there really aren't many more examples of, say, Sisko mentoring another, officer throughout the show. And I think that's notable there. Because, let's be honest. What's he going to do? Hey, Major Kira, I understand that you were a freedom fighter just a few months ago. I'm going to tell you how to be a real good leader. I don't think that's really going to work. So let's maybe go back to maybe the Charlie X and Kirk parallels here. I think the greatest mentor-mentee relationship is between Ben and Jake. I think this is just exactly what Avery Brooks wanted as well, with the depictions that we get from episodes like the Jem'Hadar, where they go camping together, to Explorers, where they get on a Bajoran solar ship and sail across the system there. So
it does feel, and I would be curious to know behind the scenes if there was discussions of like, Sisko's not like our inspirational captain. He kind of saves that element of himself for his home life.
Right.
He's kind of more of a business-minded guy when he's a captain. And I would be curious just to know if that was very much going through their head or what. I don't really know. Because you had Picard before him, who was very much the inspirational captain.
But don't you think a lot of it is like they need to set him apart?
Definitely.
If you've got Picard as kind of, let's be honest, his legacy was just hanging over Deep Space Nine. Don't you want to differentiate and diversify as much as possible? So if Sisko is yet again this super inspirational captain that you don't not want to disappoint, maybe you have to go in a different direction. I think you hit it spot on when you said he was that way in his home life. And yeah. I think that's something that we don't really get to see with any of the other captains here. And I think that's a very important distinction. I think it's part of what makes Sisko one of the most complex, you know, characters in all of Star Trek.
And just the sheer amount of like life lesson moments you get with Jake. And some of them are just, you know, very minor things. But then, you know, you watch an episode like The Visitor, where you just see him, what Jake is like without him, without these sorts of lessons and guidance throughout his life, and how he kind of falls apart. And it really makes you realize the importance that Sisko has on Jake, not just as a father, but like as someone who is very much like his spiritual mentor in many ways.
And don't you appreciate how well that relationship developed, in that it is definitely that father-son mentor-mentee relationship, and it develops into like a legitimate friendship where, you know, Jake is like, I found a freighter captain for you.
Yeah.
And I love the joke, freighter captain. Like that was always great. But there's this rapport between them, to the point that Jake is even, you know, a Ben's best man when Cassidy and Benjamin get hitched, you know? Was Lita the maid of honor? I don't know, because like I
don't know. Who was the maid of honor? I don't remember.
We were joking in the episode Facets, all of a sudden that Zia and Lita were best friends and it had never been mentioned before. Anyway.
No, that's a good point. I really do like that evolution of the Jake relationship. And I don't know how many viewers, when they tuned into Deep Space Nine in season one, were like, I really want to see a lot of stuff with the captain and his son.
Yeah.
You know, they'd gone through the Wesley experience. And I think, you know, a lot of people do like Wesley, but there was a lot of people that didn't. And I think a lot of people were worried about a repeat of that. But I really think you get something that feels so much more authentic than a lot of quote unquote normal shows that examine parental relationships. Like, is, you know, because this one on a space station is somehow so much more believable.
Is it because you can fling them into just such outrageous sort of circumstances that if you want to make it compelling, you have to get real, like, real moments going for it? I think, whereas... Well,
you've got to ground the weird stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And whether, if it's like an Earth-based, you know, I don't know, 30-something show where... What you have to do is take the grounded stuff and make it like super like outrageous to grip the viewers. And so I think that's why we can actually really cling into these great realistic human moments between these characters here.
And also, you know, you look at an episode like Explorers, and I think it's really interesting throughout the series that one of the ways they tied those characters together was that Jake and Sisko share a lot of interests together. And I don't know
the fire caves.
Of course, the fire caves. Yeah. But I don't know how many parental relationships, like father-son relationships, they do share that many interests in common, because they both were really into baseball, solar sailing. You know, you can see that they do have a lot in common.
Well, even like that episode is one where it's not Jake asking his father for career advice. It's more like Jake saying, look, Dad, I've kind of have my own career path laid out before me. I've got this opportunity to take this writing fellowship.
Yeah.
I'm going to defer for a year, but I want to let you know that this is what I'm doing. This is my path. And I think Ben recognizes that, and he's there to support him.
I think he's a little bit awkward at first, but yeah, he realizes that Jake's really good, and he's like, oh, this is fantastic. Well, pursue this.
What would have killed this relationship for me is if, you know, Jake went to Starfleet Academy.
Yeah.
And then it comes back, and just the relationship between them, if Jake's serving as a cadet, you know, on the station, much like Nog did, it just would have had this dynamic that we're talking about, like grounding kind of the weirdness.
Yeah.
This would have just seemed like kind of cliched storytelling, right? You know?
Yeah, I think so. But I always really enjoyed how supportive Sisko was towards Jake throughout the run of the series. Yeah. You know, was your father that supportive when you said you wanted to be a Star Trek podcaster?
He's like, what's a podcast?
Has he ever listened to it?
I really don't think so.
Yeah, I don't. My dad hasn't.
I think my mom, I think you've heard this story, but my mom and my sister, they were taking a road trip down to Portland, and they decided to listen to our best of, I think, 2015 or 2016 episodes. Yeah. So I know that they've listened to at least one.
Okay. So well, I think one more than my parents.
I can tell you for a fact, there's no way my girlfriend has listened to anything whatsoever. Anyway.
Now, what about Sisko and Nog? I thought this one was really interesting.
I wanted to bring this up because think about how much Sisko was kind of like, let's be honest, xenophobic and racist towards, you know, Ferengi. He thought Nog was a bad influence. He did not want Jake hanging out with Nog at all. There's a lot of tension.
There's an episode, I can't remember which one it is. It's fairly early in the run, but where it's like Sisko's invited Jake to go do something. And then he invites Nog along.
Yes.
And Sisko's just like, oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
I think it was Jem Hadar, wasn't it?
Was it?
Oh, for the, oh, the, it might have been the camping trip. And then Quark hitches a ride on the runabout, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You feel for him because, look, let's be honest. Like, we've had this discussion before. Like, the stranger and alien looks on Star Trek, the less, you know, humanity the other characters reciprocate towards them.
Right.
I think that's it's a legit problem within the Star Trek universe. But, you know, we eventually see the moment where Nog goes into the office of Sisko and lays it out for him. It's like, I see my father as a failure. I see an opportunity for me to pursue Starfleet as a new career path. Can you help me do this? Mm-hmm. And you know what? Ben takes a risk, and it seems to have paid off for him.
Yeah.
You know, and by the end of it, like, one of my favorite moments from the finale is that, you know, Nog finds out one of the last orders that Sisko ever gave was to promote him from ensign to lieutenant junior grade.
Mm-hmm.
Think about where that relationship started, though.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I always thought the relationship between Nog and Sisko was interesting, and in that there was often a debate about how much Starfleet was like the military. And that's something that got really muddy with a lot of the Nicholas Meyer movies and things like that. But I always felt like the Sisko Nog one felt very like military to me, in the way of like, Sisko wasn't, you know, your kind of inspirational, nurturing figure with Nog. Like, there was very much like that hardened battle commander almost feel,
mm-hmm,
you would see in like an old war movie with John Wayne or something, where it was like, no, he's intimidating. This isn't someone who's going to be like, they're sport.
Right.
You know, it's like Nog had to work his butt off to earn the respect of Sisko. And I always really enjoyed seeing that on Star Trek. But I always wondered how other people felt, if that was like, Sisko's a jerk. I could see a lot of people having that reaction.
Oh, yeah. And even to this day, a lot of people say, like, I can't watch Deep Space Nine because I don't like Sisko.
Sure.
I'm like, well, you know, if he's the centerpiece of your series, although I do think that Deep Space Nine is part of the most ensemble series, but
yeah,
if he is kind of the centerpiece, then I can't blame people too much. Because, look, I think by his nature, you know, he's a very polarizing figure,
yeah,
on Star Trek. And I think it's kind of the genius on the part of Deep Space Nine not to just do the copycat move of like, let's make him exactly like Kirk, or let's make him exactly like Picard.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Cam, does Sisko have any mentors himself?
Yes. I mean, I guess you would say Curzon Dax was probably his closest thing that he's ever mentioned to some sort of mentor figure, and for 20 years.
The old man.
Yeah, the old man.
Who we found out was a little into Jadzia before she had the symbiont.
I prefer to forget that episode ever happened.
Yeah, okay.
But, speaking of, we were talking about the original series and the mentor male-female relationship. That's what the Curzon Dax one feels like there.
Oh, between Curzon and Jadzia?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
That's
sure
what I feel like would have been the case.
By the time we get to this era, though, like, I think that they do handle kind of the male-female dynamics between the characters.
No, I mean this specific relationship, the Curzon-Jadzia story.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But I'm saying, like, by the time that we get to the 1990s, like, I don't think that's typical.
No, I agree.
Of what we're seeing with kind of the superiors and their junior officers or what have you.
No, I agree 100%.
So what would be kind of a strange pairing amongst the main DS9 cast, Cam?
There's so many.
I know. What if Sisko really wanted to take Quark under his wing here are Federation values. How long would this have gone on for? Would Quark have even put up with it for half an episode?
No. I think of Sisko in Take Me Out to the Holosuite.
Oh, God.
And he was not a good mentor to that team.
Yeah.
He was a terrible coach.
Yeah. Think about Rom.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
It seems awful.
Why was Sisko so... Was it Sovok? Or I forgot the name of his Vulcan rival, but was it just like that...
I think that's what it was. He was just driven nuts by that rivalry, and his team was... You know, the bad news bears.
Yeah.
And he just didn't have the patience of Walter Matthau.
He wasn't.
Or the booze, I guess.
Awful coach.
Because wasn't Walter Matthau like a heavy drinker in that movie?
I never saw the original Bad News Bears.
I believe he was.
Okay.
There's a movie you could never make nowadays, really.
I like how back in the day, comedy was, hey, guys, alcoholism is funny.
I think they still kind of do that, though. Maybe not to the same degree, but it's
probably
still...
not to the same degree. I don't think so.
But who jumps out to me as a weird one?
Odo.
Well, you know who would be actually Odo would have been strange. I think Sisko. I don't know that Sisko's the guy to be giving advice to Odo.
And I don't think Odo's the one who's going to accept it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I was thinking Garak would be really strange, especially given how their relationship in the pale moonlight.
Yeah.
Where he's like punching Garak out.
Well, we also found out that Worf had said that Sisko is the one captain that just incredibly intimidated him.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was kind of very revelatory there. So I don't know, maybe if Sisko could have taken Worf under his wing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Worf would have stopped killing leaders of the Klingon Empire.
or killing more of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows with Sisko? Exactly, he could be pretty punishing. Do you think there was any characters on Deep Space Nine who didn't find Sisko intimidating?
Did Jake find Ben?
I think that's different. I mean, in terms of the crew.
Yeah. Did Kira find Ben intimidating?
I don't know that
she also had that emissary relationship with him, and you'd assume that'd be intimidating as well, but I think there she had more of this kind of embrace for Ben after a few seasons. I don't know if she ever found him intimidating, though.
Yeah. Well, you think of what Kira had gone through in her life as well.
Yeah.
I don't know that Ben would be the one to scare her.
And I think Ezri would have found him intimidating, but I don't think Jadzia ever found Benjamin intimidating. So.
And O'Brien was just...
He was just tired. Yeah, he's just like, I got my own home life. You be a mentor in your household. I'll be a mentor to, you know, Molly O'Brien.
Right, of course.
Okay, so Cameron, why don't we jump over to another captain here, Archer.
Yeah.
So I think it's a similar dynamic that we see with Kirk in that, like, this is a series that essentially centers on, you know, three characters, sometimes four. And beyond that, I mean, characters who would have been ripe for some mentorship, like, say, a Travis or a Hoshi, they're kind of forgotten about most of the time by the captain, which was unfortunate. And say we get Archer telling Hoshi Sato to go figure out what, you know, Reed's favorite birthday cake is, which is kind of that passive misogyny that's seemed okay for the 1960s, but doesn't translate all that well into, like, 2001, 2002.
Right. The Hoshi one is, I think, a bit of a missed opportunity. Even though when I watch the Broken Bow premiere, I don't get the sense of like Hoshi as like a protege to him being a mentor. Like they feel a little more like equals.
It's also because she's like a specialist in a very well specialized field.
Yeah.
So
when he goes to recruit her, you don't get the sense of like this is some greenhorn he's bringing in.
Yeah.
It feels like someone who's a highly capable professional, and you do get moments of it in Fight or Flight,
right,
where Hoshi's adjusting to life in space and he's giving her that advice, but you never get the sense of like this is a relationship that's going to endure. And we've talked in the past in an episode, I'll post a link to it in the show notes, I can't remember the name of the exact episode, but we talked about how there was early hints that T'Pol was going to be more of a mentor to Hoshi, and then that was kind of dropped as we're all Hoshi storyline threads,
except for the creepy stalker episode in season 3.
Yeah. God, I hate that episode. That's a horrible episode.
Yeah,
but no, like Archer's kind of a crappy mentor. I think Archer has more mentors on the show than he mentors people.
Well, I was gonna say like there's episodes like Dear Doctor or Damage in which it almost seems as if Phlox is lecturing Archer, trying to mentor Archer about how humanity can strive for better.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of an interesting dynamic there. The one thing I'll make an argument for, though, it often seems as if Archer was trying to mentor T'Pol into embracing humanity more.
Yeah.
And I think it was to mixed effect in the first two seasons. But I think by the time you get to season 4, I think he is successful in that goal.
I would agree. When you watch even the finale, which is a terrible episode, but you see how far T'Pol has come and her acknowledgement of Archer. Like, you do get the sense that he had, like, a very profound impact on her evolution as a human being, or as a Vulcan, I should say, and her just role within, you know, working with Starfleet and all that. Like, I feel like she made significant changes. Do you think he did? I'd like to say he did. Like, I'd like to say she brought a lot out of him, but I realized as I was saying that, I'm like, wait a second. Did she change him a lot?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, which is unfortunate. But I'd like to think he did learn along the way. I mean, you know what? Maybe she did in the sense of like early on, he was really, really anti-Vulcan.
Oh, yeah.
Really anti-Vulcan.
Well, let's be honest. He's a total dick.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
But by the end, he was a lot better at being a diplomat and working with other species. So you know what? She did rub off on him.
Yeah,
you
know? I agree with that.
Yeah.
What about the relationship between him and Tucker?
I think this one's interesting because when I was doing research for this episode, I was just kind of Googling around to see what I could find of mentor relationships and ones that maybe popped that I didn't think of. And this was one that popped out a lot of people mentioning Archer mentoring Trip. I don't know how I feel like this one. This one always felt a little more to me like cool older brother.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like the bros kind of hanging out.
Yeah, having beers.
Yeah, it never felt to me like he was really teaching Tucker life lessons.
The one thing maybe I'll point to, and it's a flashback episode, but First Flight, where we see, I guess, Archer recognizing, you know, the skills that Trip possesses. And I think from there, he recognizes that and tries to push him harder.
Yeah.
But that's a flashback episode. So you're like, okay, so maybe at this point, there's nothing left for Archer to imbue upon his chief engineer? I don't know.
You can point to the episode Cogenitor, where he's just like ripping Trip apart. But, but then
that's
a captain would do that.
Yeah, that's not a mentor relationship.
And that's something that was often hard to kind of separate in my head was, what's the difference between them being a good captain versus being a good mentor? Because, yeah, you know, a captain is going to assume the role, like in Cogenitor, of, you know, tearing into a crew member for a really bad decision.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never really got that out of Tucker. It's weird. Like, I feel like I understand more about Archer's mentors than I do about who he actually mentored.
You mean like Admiral Forrest?
Sure. And his father building those models. And there's even that episode, Daedalus, or I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but the one with Emery Erickson who comes on.
One of the worst episodes from season 4.
Yeah. But like he was a mentor to Archer. Like they were really interested in examining how other people influenced Archer or what they meant to him. But I am very curious. Okay. We know that Archer meant a lot to T'Pol. At the end of the journey, when they all get home, how many of the crew is just like, that Jonathan Archer was one of the most magnificent people I've ever met?
I'd say for the people that made it to the end of the Zindi conflict.
Yeah.
He got them home alive.
Yeah,
you know?
He did.
But as kind of a leadership figure who you're going to remember, I'd much rather hang out with Captain Hernandez on the Columbia. Like, she seemed like more inspiring to me. You know?
But when you look at these other shows, you really do see at the end, like, there's a real reverence towards the captain.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to talk about Picard in a bit, but like that's a perfect case, or, you know, Kirk in a lot of ways too. I don't know that I felt that way about Archer from the point of view of the crew at the end.
Yeah.
They would definitely say he's our captain, but I never felt like...
Well, they have to.
I know. So. It's weird because he's not like a super strict figure. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe if he was stricter, they would have felt that way.
Do you know what it is, though? I think everyone got sick of his water polo stories.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, whatever. We get it. Yeah. And I also bet they resented him bringing a dog along on this.
Mm.
If my quarters was like next to the captain's and I had to listen to the dog bark all night, I would not be impressed.
You and I had that in a hotel room at the Star Trek Las Vegas convention where someone had a dog in the next room to us and it was barking all night.
How impressed were we?
Not impressed.
What, do you think that guy wanted to be Captain Archer? Is that was that why he brought his dog to bark?
And we were like Mayweather.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Porthos relationship was the biggest mentor-protege relationship for Archer?
Well, I mean, you've kind of spoiled one thing that I was going to bring up with the Picard discussion, but yes, because Picard would often chuck cheese at people's faces. And you know.
You mean Archer?
No, Picard.
Oh, Picard.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we've kind of summed up that there wasn't a lot for Archer from the point of view of relationships we saw on the show. What would have been a weird one?
Any relationship then? And that could, no, the one that I would not have, or I felt would have been awkward watching, it's like Reed. Because like Reed doesn't really exhibit much humanity.
No.
So that would have been a really funny but awkward dynamic to watch as Archer takes Reed under his wing and Reed's just trying to be polite, but you can kind of tell he's getting a little anxious. He wants him to like F off.
Reed is a really weird character.
Yes,
I mean,
he
would support an entire podcast episode on like the psychology of Reed, but I mean, he's a character who's incredibly like icy, but also really neurotic and just has all these weird quirks to his character that I remember when I was just rewatching a lot of Enterprise. I'm not done yet, but I'm in the midst of my rewatch. And there would be all these episodes. I'm like, I'd completely forgotten this one. This is a really weird episode. Although, you know what? As I say that out loud, there is kind of a little bit of a mentor episode with Reed. The one where Reed is like trapped on the, I believe it's him, on the saucer section.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's Archer kind of having to coach him through that. And there is a bit of bit of that relationship there.
Yeah.
So, but Reed's an odd character in that one too. Yeah. So, you know, Reed is the most uncomfortable one.
Didn't he get his leg pierced by a probe or something?
Yeah. Ouch. I think it was his leg. Yeah.
Well. All right, let's go to the big one here, Cam. Loyal listeners have been very patient because I think we knew this is what everybody really wanted to dig into.
Before we jump into that, I actually found a poll online from 2018 that StarTrek.com did of who would you want to be your mentor of the captains.
Okay.
And I will say, the one we're going to get to, Picard, was number one with 46%.
46, that's almost half.
Followed by Sisko with 18, Janeway with 17, Kirk with 11, Archer with 5.
I think,
and the other one that we're going to get to a little later, I won't reveal yet.
Okay, I'm actually surprised. I thought that Janeway would have had more, and Sisko would have had less.
I agree 100%. And they actually, this apparently is a super popular topic because they do this poll like every couple years on StarTrek.com, and the numbers have shifted back and forth. Kirk's actually been in the number two spot before.
Okay,
I think in 2015, but the most recent one, he was way down. I agree with you. Janeway's an odd one. I would have thought she would actually not give Picard a run for his money, but be someone who's maybe the 20-something percentages, and then the others are breaking up the smaller numbers. That's what I would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
But what do I know, apparently?
That's what I say every single day.
The listeners say it every week.
Yeah. Let's jump into one Jean-Luc Picard here. And I think, there's a bunch of relationships we can get into. Let's just kick it off with some of the people that are lower down here. The Wesley stuff. And I think it is, it doesn't hit me more than in an episode like Final Mission, where Wesley just spells it all out, where he's telling an unconscious Picard who's really thirsty that he never wanted to disappoint him.
Yeah.
And it was breaking him up that it seems as if Wesley's going to fail Picard at the worst possible moments. And I think if you track where the relationship started, where it's what the hell are you doing on my bridge?
Yeah.
And see where it ends, where, well, it's actually not a great end for Wes.
No, it's not.
You know, but
going off as a traveler.
Hills and valleys with this relationship. And it's honestly something that I really do appreciate, this dynamic that those two characters share.
Maybe the cutscene from Nemesis was the resolution we all needed.
Yeah. But,
I had a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think Picard's relationship with Wesley played a big role in salvaging Wesley?
I'm thinking about some of the standout episodes though, and I actually think it's, kind of after Wesley left. I mean, let's be honest. First Duty.
Sure.
The
Game is a really good episode.
But I would say The Game is not like a Picard mentoring Wesley episode, but I would say that The First Duty is. And I think that might be, one of Wesley's top two episodes.
I agree.
So,
but do you think it was when they started introducing Picard as this sort of mentor figure towards Wesley that Wesley made more sense as an addition to your show,
as opposed to Picard just being annoyed by Wesley?
Yeah.
I know. I agree with that. And
not only that, but being annoyed, but also just having episodes where it's like, well, Wesley saved the ship again.
Yeah, and it kind of makes Picard look like an incompetent captain,
right?
It was not good writing in those early seasons, guys.
No.
Yeah, but even an episode like Samaritan Snare, where we get that great, discussion between those two as they take that shuttle ride.
For him to get heart surgery.
Yeah, it happens to
Picard, not Wesley.
So, why don't we get into First Duty, though? Because I think this is probably the zenith of, I don't know about the mentor relationship, but at least kind of the zenith of whatever conflict those two had ever experienced together. And I think it's very prescient that maybe Picard feels that to a certain degree he's failed as a mentor if Wesley just doesn't seem to understand some fundamental principles of the duty as a Starfleet officer.
Well, I really like this episode because we see throughout Next Generation, Wesley is pretty much a flawless character in a lot of ways. He's kind of that G-shucks, golly G kind of kid that can do everything. And I like that we see a real character weakness in him here. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that makes him a far more interesting character. It's the sort of thing they should have introduced much earlier. To have these insecurities that would kind of pull him in a direction like this.
Doesn't it make sense, though, that his weaknesses are most visible when he's amongst his peers?
Yeah.
Not amongst, adults, but
throwing
amongst
snowballs.
But amongst people that are his own age. You see it in maybe the Dauphin as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even to a certain degree, the young Ito children that are wearing barely any clothes in Justice.
That's an episode that wouldn't get made that way anymore.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I just remember my girlfriend walked in on me watching that, and she looked at that actress, and she was like, how old is she? She was horrified.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. I swear I did not choose this episode. Cam's making me watch it for the podcast.
I'm actually shocked that we haven't seen some of the Ito children at the conventions.
Well, we've seen Ito at the conventions.
I mean, in terms of the actual actors who played those roles, you would think that they would actually do pretty good for autograph signing. Because there's a lot of, I think, ironic amusement over that episode. I think people actually kind of like it for that reason. I think they would actually do pretty good.
No, I can't disagree with that. Maybe move on to another relationship that Picard has here.
Sure.
Okay, let's talk about Ensign Roh. I think this is a fascinating one here. It starts off with a character who Picard's like, well, I guess we can try to work with her for now. And then by the end of the episode, he's like, okay, I see potential in you. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a place on my ship, I will make a place for you on the ship. But you got to kind of like work with me here. And I think she recognizes that somebody recognizes something in her. And I think that's what Picard does best is inspiring people. He is, I would say, the most inspiring captain that we've had in Star Trek. And so I love this dynamic.
Other than Jellicoe.
Okay, you make a good argument. I'm totally with you there. You know, that Ronnie Cox is just, magnetism personified. So.
Of course.
Yeah, but look at how the Roh relationship ends for Picard.
Yeah.
Is Picard just constantly disappointed by those that he mentors?
It seems that way. Yeah. And yet all the characters seem kind of haunted by letting Picard down, because Ensign Roh really worries about that at the end, too, that she let Picard down. Ensign Roh is a really fascinating one, because you have this character that comes from, violence and chaos in her past, and just no structure, really. And you see how Picard provides that in a way that is still tough enough that I think meshes well with her personality. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if it was a more laid-back, happy-go-lucky captain, imagine Ensign Roh shows up on the ship of, Kelvin versus Kirk.
Yeah.
It's like, that ain't going to work probably that great.
I don't think so.
Whereas like a Picard, he is kind of that strict taskmaster in many ways, but he has those sensitive conversations with people that really inspire them, but it makes them want to do better. And you can see how it's a good outlet for Roh, but I do question how Roh would have performed in a Starfleet career where she is getting transferred around.
To say one, Jellicoe's ship?
Sure.
Would she have lasted?
We've seen a lot of loser captains, not just Jellicoe. Captain Stiles.
No, but I don't think she would have done well under Jellicoe at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or maybe a pressman either.
Yeah.
I think that would have been tough for her. And I think she lucked out quite a bit with the Picard assignment that she got.
So then it, I guess, begs the question, was Ensign Roh cut out for a career in Starfleet, or was Picard more of a mentor, just person to person for her? Because I don't know that Starfleet works for her.
I don't think Starfleet works for Roh.
Yeah.
I think that's clear. So, which means, what is this relationship really about between her and Picard? And I think it's Picard recognizing that there is somebody who has some clear talent.
Mm-hmm.
How can I guess, focus it in the right way if this is her chosen vocation at this point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of an interesting thing that maybe wasn't necessarily 100% clear upon her debut on the series.
But yeah.
It's something that became clear to us as viewers as this went on.
I would have loved to have been able to check in with that character further down the road.
Yeah.
And get a sense of
Did you say further down the row?
I wish I did.
Oh, okay.
But, obviously Preemptive Strike is their final episode. And then she was supposed to go to Deep Space Nine. That never happened.
Yeah.
And so we never got to find out whatever happened with Roh. We know that nothing good happened to the Maquis. I like to think she wasn't around when that happened, but we don't know.
No, she was on the planet that Sisko gassed.
He's like, I told you, I'm not like Picard.
Yeah. All right. Another one I definitely want to tackle, Cito Jaxa.
Yeah.
This is
brutal. I mean, I guess Worf's more of the mentor figure with Cito Jaxa, but
let's think about it, where Picard totally rips a strip off her. He's like, I don't even know how you got on this ship. What are you even doing here? And then we finally figure out that Picard's just testing her, and he was like, oh, actually, I did want you on the ship because I saw potential in you. By the way, can I send you on a suicide mission? You don't have to say yes.
Yeah.
But I believe in you.
Yeah.
So, of course, she says yes and she dies.
Yeah.
Is this like manipulative Picard at this point? I don't know. This is kind of a scary mentor mentee relationship.
One of my favorite elements of TNG is often, you know, you'll write your Picard-centric episodes, and they're kind of these soulful, philosophical episodes where Picard comes off looking really great. Like, he seems like a really rich, you know, three-dimensional, fascinating character. But then you have these episodes written from the point...
Cupid?
Especially Cupid. And then you have these other episodes written from the point of view of other characters where you'll only have, for example, Picard in, like, a couple scenes,
yeah,
but he comes across as like very harsh or something, like from their point of view.
Or like Hollow Pursuits, where he's calling Barclay Broccoli.
Yeah, he seems like kind of a crappy captain in that moment. Like he's just like, I can't remember this guy's name.
It's not Broccoli.
Yeah, like I kind of like that element of TNG, because they do that with some of the other characters as well, but it does feel like Picard is often written from the point of view of the character who's dealing with him.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because you can totally see how, I mean, I think Picard's a terrible mentor towards Broccoli.
Yeah.
Barclay. I just did it.
I thought that was on purpose.
That was not.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, I think he is. Who's the worst mentor to Barclay? LaForge or Picard?
I actually think LaForge is much better.
Okay.
I actually think LaForge, look, he's a real jerk towards him off the top.
Yeah.
But I think he does grow to understand him.
Comes around.
Do you think Picard ever grows to understand him?
No. Why is Picard saying, oh, Reg, you want to serve on the Enterprise E?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Does Picard come to appreciate Barclay by the time we get to the First Contact era?
Barclay doesn't have enough to do in that movie to even get a sense of, and he's not even with Picard in those scenes, no. So I don't know.
I don't know.
I would.
I'm just thinking, like, Picard had such an out. He's like, sorry, Barclay, the D is destroyed. Yeah. You're going to have to find a new assignment now.
Why is it Picard could never find a way in with him? Because you look at some of the other ones he's dealt with. I mean, a lot of them are kids or like quite young, because you obviously see with Picard, there's that episode Disaster where he's in the turbo lift with all those kids and he's, you know, giving them pips and giving them promotions. Like, he's able to really corral kids, but you can
Which kind of goes against some other established character traits.
Definitely.
Of his.
Definitely.
Anyways,
big time. Yeah. But then you see with a character like Barclay, who's not a kid, he's 30-something, and obviously has a lot of neuroses and issues, that Picard is just like, I got nothing.
Yeah. Should Barclay be incredibly offended that, like, Picard can look at, you know, somebody like Ro.
Sure.
Or somebody who messed up big time, like Sito.
Yeah.
And recognize a lot of potential, but he looks at Barclay's like, no, next.
Do you think it's more that Picard is better at molding young people than he is at dealing with established cases? Like, Barclay's been around a while.
Yeah.
And he's very much...
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's what the deal is. And, you know, it's really how much influence can Picard have on Barclay at this point in his life?
Because how old do you think Ro was supposed to be on the show? I mean, I know probably Bajoran ages are maybe a little different than human ages.
Yeah,
but...
I would say roughly 24.
Yeah, so pretty young still.
Yeah.
And, of course, very early in her career.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that is what it is. And that, you know, you never saw Picard giving lectures to, like, Geordi LaForge, really.
Oh, I was actually going to bring that up. Because LaForge seems like somebody who could have used some mentorship when it comes to leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have had a fascinating journey with Geordi LaForge the last few years we've been doing this podcast. And we've realized a character who we thought was one of the coolest dudes in all of Star Trek. The more episodes we watch, we realize he's just this jerk and he has really bad leadership skills. And I think he would have benefited quite a lot from Picard saying, hey, you know, Geordi, this is actually how you deal with these situations, you know, and we never saw that dynamic.
You never even got the sense that Picard noticed that LaForge had poor interpersonal skills.
And I think that's a failure on Picard's part because, like, Geordi's head of a department. He should have, like, much better leadership skills. And Geordi just never displays any of that throughout the series, you know. And shouldn't Picard or, at the very least, Riker have brought this up? I don't see any evidence that it ever was.
It is weird because you look at the main cast and you could see some definite mentor kind of relationships going on with Picard and Riker. Definitely kind of molding him to be a captain. Even in moments with Troy sometimes, but you never really get a sense of that with LaForge. No. I mean, Beverly's too much of a, you know, well, equal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not going to behave that way with Beverly, but you could definitely imagine that he would have these moments. Well, he definitely does with Worf as well.
Yeah.
But you would never see that with LaForge. And yeah. I don't know in the fact that when we did a lot of LaForge research for our Psychology of Geordi LaForge episode, look for a link for that one in the show notes. LaForge is written really inconsistently a lot of the time.
Well, think about season one, season two, LaForge, especially season one, LaForge.
Where he's like, woo-wee!
Don't get cocky, kid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now this is pod racing.
I don't know. It's such a weird character.
It is.
I don't know. Just with you, is there any Picard relationships? Because we focus a lot on maybe the younger characters, the more recurring characters, you know, and I think that's actually where the most interesting stuff is going on with Picard as the mentor, though. But with regards to the main cast, who do you think is kind of the next closest one to Picard when it comes to the mentor-mentee relationship, though? I think this is actually a tough one because I think it seems as if, like, such a fully realized crew in which these are the best of the best.
Yeah.
I wonder how much opportunity there is. I think, for me, I'll throw it out there, I think it might be Worf. In that, like, you see Picard as the arbiter of succession, you see Worf screwing up a lot, and you see Picard say, no, man, like, this is not how it should work. And I think Worf messes up, I think, more than any other crew member, though.
I agree with you. I think Worf... Okay, well, the thing is, I think Worf is the one who is given the most episodes dealing with Picard having to discipline him or kind of involve himself in Worf's life and guide him. But I would say that I think often Picard plays a very strong role in informing Riker's journey, but it's a very unflashy, non-dramatic journey. Like, mm-hmm. Worf is the one who inspires episodes. Riker gets moments.
Okay.
And, you know, you get a lot of talks between Picard and Riker where he's giving him advice on how to be a captain.
And they're in the ready room.
For example. Yeah, exactly. And that goes throughout the duration of the series. It's just that you're not getting a lot of episodes dealing with that because that's pretty boring dramatic television to write. Whereas the Worf stuff is fireworks dramatically. And so you are getting those episodes where Worf runs off to, you know, invade a prison camp.
Why not? He really wanted to throw spears through hoops.
Right, yeah. Oh, for sure. And, you know, you get those moments where Worf really does kind of bad things within Starfleet. And Riker would never do those things.
No.
But it gives Picard those moments to step in and really give him what for. And I think really lay out for the audience, like, why Worf is wrong. And what Worf needs to do to get better at his job.
So for weirdest mentor-mentee potential, I say Picard and Tom Riker.
Oh, okay, yeah,
Picard would be like, so where am I starting again? Am I going back to, like, you know, pre-season one Riker? Or has this Tom kind of learned some lessons making phaser art? You know? I don't know.
This is still the Riker that's, like, watching holographic, like, belly dancers all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of touched on it earlier, but I feel like Picard Barkley whole episode where it's just the two of them, like, stranded on a planet together.
I would watch the hell out of that one.
How did they never do that? Oh, that would be...
I don't know.
From the point of view of just writing a show that kind of writes itself, that one is it.
Okay, Cam, let's pitch this to the Star Trek Picard spinoff writers.
Like, oh, man. I don't know that I want to
see... Get Dwight Schultz in for that guest star appearance.
I don't know how old Dwight Schultz is. He's probably close to 60 at this point.
I think he's well past 60.
You think what's past 60?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if it would be depressing or not to see, like, a 60-year-old Barkley that's still a mess. I like to have hope that Barkley straightened himself out and had a good life.
He got a lot of extra counseling sessions from Deanna. So.
Well, yeah.
There you go. As we saw in Star Trek Voyager.
Exactly. I think that's the weird one, for sure.
Cam, why don't we jump over to Star Trek Discovery then?
Because
there is some interesting stuff going on, especially with Captain Lorca.
Yeah.
In which he recognizes Burnham as somebody who has a lot of potential.
Right.
And you brought this up earlier on, but you were saying, like, we don't often see, you know, Star Trek characters that have to be brought back into the fold of Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is, like,
definitely
her journey throughout season one, and it's Lorca guiding her that way.
And I should say Lorca was the 3% on the poll by StarTrek.com, so in the bottom spot.
I can't really blame.
No, that's a pretty... Only 2% lower than Archer.
Yeah. I'll say this. Maybe, I don't know, if you haven't watched all of season one of Star Trek Discovery, maybe, I don't know, skip ahead 5 minutes.
Sure.
one, two, three, spoiler alerts. Well, we find out, like, kind of the mentorship that he was bestowing on her, it had a lot of nefarious purposes behind it, though.
Yeah.
In which we find out that he's actually from the Mirror Universe, and he recognized the Burnham from that Mirror Universe as somebody who had a lot of talent, which is why he figured he could use this Burnham to enact his own means of survival. And I don't know, it's a very troublesome sort of relationship when you find out a lot of the other details and how there's kind of this sexual predatory nature to Lorca in that he was originally a father figure to Mir Burnham, and then they became lovers.
Yeah.
So as far as mentors go, I think Lorca sucks.
Well, I agree. Going in, Lorca sucks. Like, he's a terrible mentor. But I do have the question to you.
I'll say it's 100%. The charisma of Jason Isaacs that makes us drawn into him as kind of a leadership figure. I think that's what it is. And I think it's actually, it's great television. It's almost to the detriment of us as viewers having somebody who's so charismatic playing somebody who is just...
That repellent, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a story, actually, Anson Mount said he almost got the role.
Really?
Lorca. Okay. Yeah, he was up for it.
I'm curious about that.
Yeah. I think Pike was the better casting choice for him.
Yeah, I agree.
So far, it seems that way.
So wait, would he have gotten to have, like, Medusa hair? Lorca with Medusa hair? Is that what we missed out on?
That's a Inhumans joke for the two people that watched Inhumans.
Look for our Inhumans podcast coming soon.
It'll get canceled before we even start it. Lorca, look, I think we can all acknowledge he's a terrible captain, terrible human being,
yes,
terrible whatever. But did he instill any lessons that had positive outcomes, do you think?
Yes, because Saru says, F Lorca, you're the real crew now.
Yeah.
And everyone felt inspired by that. And Lorca even has a speech to the crew while he's still on the ISS Charon. And he says over the review screen, like, I'm glad I was able to mold you guys into something worth, you know, fighting for.
Right.
You guys are all soldiers now. I think he believes he had a great impact on the crew. I think right now, you asked about Archer, about how the crew looks back on Archer.
Yeah.
I think this crew looks back on Lorca and they're like, F that guy.
I do wonder, though, if Lorca in many ways made them like survivors. In a way that maybe another captain wouldn't have.
Yeah. No, I can buy that.
You look at the circumstances they were going through, that Klingon war.
Really? I don't know, Cam. It seemed like a pretty easygoing war based on what we saw on screen.
That's true enough.
Yeah.
But I would like to believe that something good came out of the Lorca contribution to the show. Yes, he's an evil character who obviously, gets, axed partway through. But I would like to think that they did learn something from him, even if, his mission and everything was obviously counterintuitive to what they represent.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to think that he did somehow contribute to their evolution as characters.
Okay.
For the positive, take something positive out of it.
I'd hope so.
Even if it's like, what was wrong about this and what did this teach us?
I think there's just such a overwhelming sense of betrayal that it's going to take people a little while to kind of wrap their heads about what may have taken away from this experience with him.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be the great, I learned some leadership skills.
Yeah.
I think people are going to try to expunge him from their memory as best as they can.
I do hope season two maybe delves into this with the introduction of Pike.
Yeah.
When you are bringing in a new captain, what did the previous captain do to us? Do we trust this Pike right out of the gate? I think that would be an interesting thing to delve into that a previous Star Trek show wouldn't have done, but I think this is a really great opportunity to do that here.
What about Georgia as a mentor? I think the Mirror, not the Mirror, the Prime Universe Giorgio, we only saw her two episodes, and I actually kind of like the dynamic that she had between letting Burnham and Saru bounce off each other squabbling children.
Yeah.
And I think Giorgio is all down to let them have that, and then she can make the right decision.
Yes, I agree. I guess my only issue with Giorgio, just as a character, as a mentor, is that it feels like on the page, it was written, who is this character? Mentor.
Sure.
It doesn't feel like your Picards where it's being drawn out of them, out of their personality.
Gradually.
Yeah, gradually just naturally. It feels like Giorgio on paper in the series Bible, it was written mentor was the first word.
But I'll say that there's a genuine moment that I think happened at the very beginning of the Battle of the Binary Stars where it's the flashback moment in which we see Burnham arrive still in her Vulcan regalia. And you get the sense, she's... Giorgio's going to teach this woman how to be human.
Mm-hmm.
We flash forward 7 more years to the battle, and you feel like Burnham is this very conflicted person who can use logic, but also allows her emotions to guide her, I guess, her gut instincts too.
Yeah.
And I think Giorgio had a huge role in molding this young woman too.
And I think something that's very much a credit to Giorgio is when you look at the two under her charge of Burnham and Saru, they're both very different individuals with very different approaches to the job that are both top flight at it.
Yeah.
So she's very good at molding personalities and letting the personality guide their success, not I have to create clones of myself.
Right.
Which is maybe what a Lorca would have done.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Mirror Universe, Giorgio. I don't know.
Wow, we haven't seen really enough of her as a mentor. I mean,
but no, you know what they did establish though is how much she had taken Mirror Burnham under her wing, and yeah, that was very much kind of the mother-daughter relationship.
I didn't read that comic book series though, with all the Mirror Universe Burnham.
Fair enough.
Maybe she's amazing.
Yeah. all right. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to whatever dynamic Pike brings to the series as kind of a mentor. Yeah. I'm genuinely curious about how that's going to go.
Pike was a fantastic mentor in the Kelvinverse movies.
Yeah.
Like, I think Bruce Greenwood was absolutely fantastic at creating a mentor character that didn't feel like hammering you over the head with dad advice. Like, he actually felt kind of tough, no nonsense, but inspiring at the same time. And I'm hoping we can get stuff like that out of this Pike. You know, obviously a little different because it's Anson Mount. It's a different timeline, all that sort of stuff. I would like to see those sorts of qualities that are inspirational about Pike, because we haven't seen that in the, in you know, the cage, really.
No, unless he's lying on his bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crying to Dr. Boyce. Dr. Boyce was the true mentor.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
The days where they've handed out alcohol.
That's my kind of mentor. Yeah.
So we have to ask, I think, at the end, Tyler, if you had to have a Star Trek mentor of one of these captains, who would be your go-to and who would be the one you would want the least? The one you feel you would work the worst with.
Okay, work the worst with. Okay, the one that I'll be honest. I'll go with Picard as the one that I would want to be, you know, my leader, the one who I think I could learn a lot from and who could inspire me the most. The one who would just not be working for me leadership style-wise. Right now I'm debating between Kirk, who I think would be very dismissive of me, or Sisko, who I think would be, as I keep saying, very kind of intimidating figure, where it's like, you're there to get your job done. Not much room for error here. It's all life or death here. For me, I'd honestly probably prefer to serve under Kirk. So I'd say Sisko's actually literally my favorite captain.
Yeah.
But as a mentor, he would not be the one that I'd want to be serving under, personally. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I feel like the one I would actually want to serve under isn't Picard. I think Picard, I don't know that I would...
It's Jellicoe?
I'm that boring. Yeah. I don't know that I would mesh well with Picard. I actually think Janeway would be the better one for me. I feel like I would operate a lot better working under a Janeway. Like, I think she just, her command style and ability to kind of mentor people would work best with my personality. Plus, Janeway has like a sense of humor, and I think that's really valuable. I think that's maybe something we should have touched on in the episode. Like, Janeway has a sense of humor. Picard does not.
No, that's true.
And that would drive me out of my mind to deal with.
You can never just crack one in front of the captain.
No. And who would be the worst for me? I mean, I think, you know, you got to say like Lorca, but I'm just going to dismiss him because that's, you know, that's obvious when someone's like a sociopath.
Yeah.
I think Archer might be tough for me.
Oh, yeah.
I think an Archer or a Kirk would be tough because they have that kind of like broing down kind of attitude. And it's something I would so not be responsive to. Like, I just would not be inspired by that whatsoever. And I'd be like, I don't want to be here anymore.
I'd love that, actually.
Yeah. You're like, let's get on the tank tops and play some volleyball. Playing with the boys.
No, seriously, I'd love that. Okay.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll have a video up this week and all sorts of other fun. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Yeah, it's going to be the final Short Treks of 2018 until we get back to the final Short Trek period.
Period?
Well, we'll see.
Exclamation mark.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing The Brightest Star in just a few days, so tune in for that.
Mm-hmm. Saru backstory, I'm very curious about this one.
Are you?
I didn't read the novel, so hopefully hopefully this short trek will get me up to speed in 15 minutes versus many hours of reading a book. Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vedic Brile is my true mentor, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P as in Picard. You don't have a sense of humor, do you, Ben? O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.